Mr. Speaker, let me congratulate the Minister of Finance and the Prime Minister for Let me congratulate the Honorable Prime Minister and the Minister of Finance for a budget well thought of, well worked out, and beneficial to the entire populace of St. Lucia. Mr. Speaker, I intended to speak on the economics, on the group elements of the budget, but I'm forced to deal with just a few issues because I will not waste the oral members' time and deal with irrelevance. Just a few issues as they relate to statements by the representative of Central Battery. Just quickly, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, he spoke about the neglected people of Cache Central. He forgot that the Labour Party only represented Central Cache for 4 years. For the remainder of the time, it was the United States Party who controlled Central Cache. They were the ones who were in government for that time. And for the 5 years when Sarah Flood was there, these were the days when things happened in Central Cache. So the army forgot that the United States Party controlled Central Cache for 30 years. Mr. Speaker, he spoke about a monopoly. Mr. Speaker, a monopoly is not any situation that the people of a country would like. But a monopoly, if it is bad, is when the monopoly is created by government. When the government has made a situation where the monopoly can exist. But in solution, Mr. Speaker, anybody can import food into the country. Anybody can go into the supermarket business. Anybody can rent things to sell wholesale. It is because of a merger that was created by two economic entities. That is what the members of the opposition are speaking about. Not a monopoly created by government, because government has created no barriers for trade. Government has put nothing in place that says to people they cannot enter the supermarket business. Further, Mr. Speaker, if you look at the pattern of trading as far as food is concerned, you will see there are retailers, there are wholesalers, and there are distributors. So there is no monopoly in the food distribution. What exists in the food distribution is that there is one big player that has been created by a merger. So, Mr. Speaker, so the idea that government has caused a monopoly is false, Mr. Speaker, and I'm sure that the honorable member knows this is not true. Mr. Speaker, he speaks about water, WASCO, and fails to understand that the reason why WASCO is in that situation is because the government inherited WASCO in 1997 with over $40 million of debt, Mr. Speaker. Over $100 million of debt. We inherited WASCO in that situation. So we had to clean the stables. So to cause WASCO to be on a footing where WASCO could borrow money, so WASCO could borrow money and WASCO could continue in the expansion. But Mr. Speaker, listen to what the member says. He says that the price of electricity, the price of fuel has limited the cost of water. Mr. Speaker, the member either doesn't know what he's saying or he deliberately misled the House. One of the largest components of cost for the distribution of water is the pumping, Mr. Speaker, and the pumping is done by fuel through electric pumps. So, Mr. Speaker, the logic is just things that they're just saying, like my colleague said, just saying things. Mr. Speaker, bananas. The member speaks about bananas, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, look at the history of bananas. Look at this, your banana, Mr. Speaker. 1995, St. Lucia, 103,000 tons. Dominica, 32,000 tons. 1996, St. Lucia, 104,000 tons. Dominica, 49. 1997, banana, 71,000 tons, Mr. Speaker. Dominica, 44,000 tons. St. Lucia, in 1995, 54.4% of banana production. 1996, 55%. 1997, 51%. Dominica, 16, 20, 25. St. Vincent, 26, 23, 22. Grenada, 2.97 and 0.07, Mr. Speaker. Constant declines in banana production for the entire region. It's our fault. Drastic, Mr. Speaker, very drastic, the years 95, 96, 97, 98, 99. Every year, Mr. Speaker, it shows you that the share of banana production in the entire Windward Island has decreased. They are living in the past, Mr. Speaker. Is it the St. Lucia government that has caused banana production to go down in St. Vincent, Dominica, Grenada? No, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, he speaks about a study on the transportation system, which the minister will deal with. What the member didn't say, it was just a study. Studies are done for the very purpose that instead studies. The government hasn't implemented any of these studies. The globe, there are some studies that are going for everything, Mr. Speaker, again, misleading the house, misleading. You come here and you make a hue and cry with a study. Has the government implemented it? Exactly. It's an exercise to review, to look at, and come to a conclusion. When the government got the study, the government came to the conclusion that the government was not dealing with the centralized birth system. Very simple. Mr. Speaker, he speaks about student loans at the Social Development Bank. Mr. Speaker, this government, the government of the Solution Labour Party, has guaranteed funds from the SLB, from the Capital Investment Bank, at the SLB for student loans. This government also has given grants to students through the European Development Fund, the NO Office for Students. This government has given more study leave than any government in the history of St. Lucia. This government has given bursaries to children of poor people. When you were there in 97, you all gave about 70 bursaries. As we speak, we've given more than 4,000 bursaries to the children of poor people. Further, we have a book rental scheme for the children of poor people. What are you talking about? The evidence doesn't show. There's no evidence, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, he deals with incentives for tourism and how much money the tourism dollar stays there. I'm not going to do that. I did that in my contribution of tourism. But Mr. Speaker, history is a strange thing. And the member speaks about all-inclusive hotels. And he blames this government for an inclusive hotel. Mr. Speaker, I will make it a document of the House. Budget address by the Right Honorable John G.M. Compton. April 19th, 1994, a document of the House. And I quote Mr. Speaker from page 9. Another raging debate in St. Lucia is the issue of all-inclusive hotels. We in St. Lucia must realize that this is the worldwide trend and we cannot buck it. In spite of all the incentives offered in St. Lucia for hotel development, only one major hotel has been constructed in the past 20 years. Only one major hotel has been constructed in St. Lucia in the past 20 years. 1994. 20 years. Simple math. From 74 to 94, according to the rules of the then Prime Minister, not one major hotel was built in St. Lucia. Further, Mr. Speaker, it goes, it follows. St. Lucia needs the hotel rooms to supplement our threatened banana industry. From 1994, he knew the banana industry was threatened. He knew he knew he was threatened, he put a sentence. St. Lucia needs the foreign investment to supplement our own efforts. The question, which we must answer, is whether St. Lucia wants the foreign investment and whether St. Lucia is in a position to dictate the terms of the foreign investment. Not my words, Mr. Speaker. We heard quite a lot, particularly from those who are comfortable about selling our bushfire. Same thing you heard this morning. The same thing you heard this morning. You're sitting and these are the ones, that's why, that is why, Mr. Speaker, that is why they cannot stay to listen to the truth. Because history is on our side, Mr. Speaker. History and evidence is on our side. And in this election, since they have gone back in the past, we're going to go back in time and go back in the past and bring the truth. The truth to light, Mr. Speaker, because the adults have just started. They had the time. But the history, Mr. Speaker, the history is on our side. And I continue, Mr. Speaker. The 3,000 or so, from that time, he was talking about, Mr. Speaker, the 3,000 or so children who leave school every year have a birthright to get a job in the country of their birth. And if local investment cannot meet this need, the government has a responsibility to these children to attract the necessary capital so they can use their talent and get a job in their own country. And the first point says, there were over 4,000 applicants for 275 jobs in an all-inclusive hotel. That is the subject of so much criticism and debate. 1994. Mr. Speaker, I will deal with the tourism. He talks about the arcade, Mr. Speaker. Who built the arcade? This government has spent thousands of dollars on the arcade, and the Prime Minister has in his budget, we're going to improve it. Who built the arcade? If the arcade was built properly in the first instance, we would not have to spend that kind of money. The arcade was built, as most things, under the United Records of the Poor, for political expediency. Political expediency, Mr. Speaker. And now, we are the ones who have to pay for the political expediency of the past. Mr. Speaker, he speaks about villas and Rockefeller Agreement, Mr. Speaker, and public beaches. Mr. Speaker, this government never owned the land at Fishing Point. I've made that point clear. The land was always in private ownership. But Mr. Speaker, here's what the government did. The government ensured that the public park of 4.67 acres, and you can check it for yourself in the land registry, number 1256B, 251 on the northern side, and 2.5 acres, 1257B, 167 on the southern side, was kept for the public. And further, Mr. Speaker, when this government leases the Queen's Chase, part of the agreement for the lease says that you cannot exchange it, there must be beach access, and you cannot trade with the Queen's Chase. And I'll put it to you, Mr. Speaker, that there has been evidence where the former government leased the Queen's Chase and leased it for no stated conditions, unconditionally. And we, this government, have to correct it by changing the government. Mr. Speaker, history is on our side. History and the truth is on our side. Further, we have created a buffer zone in the Pigeon Point area, a buffer zone for public access to the beach, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, he spoke about cement. And listen to that illogic. You see, Mr. Speaker, when you make public pronouncement. And when you speak loudly, Mr. Speaker, trying to mislead the public, you must understand what you say. Listen to the central cashier's member's logic. He says that because the government puts cement, listen, on a fixed markup, that will encourage distributors to source cement at a higher price. Just think about it. Simple mathematics. Think about it. Because you source it at a higher price, that means because you paid more for it, But the government put a fixed markup, you make more profit. These are the emotions that they stir. These are the things that they stir. Mr. Speaker, if you pay more for it and the market is fixed, you haven't made any more profit. You haven't made any more profit. That's the foolishness that our citizens have. It's basically, Mr. Speaker, what the government did. And I challenge you, Mr. Senator Castries, tell me one country in the region where cement is cheaper than Tenusha. That's the question. One country, one island where cement is USMG. So all right, about cement, Mr. Speaker. Then it goes along and you read some of these reports, Mr. Speaker. No, before I go talk about cost overruns, Mr. Speaker, I will read to you a list of projects where there have been cost overruns. I want you to ask me, tell me which government ran the country during that time? Mr. Speaker, I can make it document at the House. Project on the United Records of the Poor, where there were cost overruns. Cass Street Harbor Redevelopment by Concreto. East Coast Road Improvement and Alignment. Huanoa Airport Renovation Expansion. VG Airport Expansion. Cass Street Golden Highway Project. Pigeon Island Causeway Development. Cass Street Waterfront Office Building. New CDC Housing Project. And for that report, Mr. Speaker, you remember, and I'm glad you spoke about audit reports, because for that report, a particular auditor general was fired. He didn't come in this morning and read audit reports. He forgot the history. This government never fired any auditor general. And when the auditor general was fired, because of the same reports that they are reading out, this government had to pay a compensation because of what they did. Further, Mr. Speaker, further. Cost overruns. West Coast Road Development, Phase 1, 2, and 3. Rim Road Project, Cat Streets to Cul-de-Sac Highway, what they call the Millennium Highway. Cat Streets Inner Relief Road Program, cost overruns. VG Roundabout, cost overruns. Cat Streets River Bridge by Police Quarters, cost overruns. Manual Street Redevelopment, cul-de-sac flood protection works, cul-de-sac industrial and commercial development, Mr. Speaker. Every one of them, there was substantial cost overruns, Mr. Speaker. Where the money gone? You know, Mr. Speaker, you know why this is so sad? Because these things are said, they are repeated, there is no challenge, and some people believe it, Mr. Speaker. But Mr. Speaker, the time is now. Now is the time where the government has to deal with these issues one by one, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, he talks about the Rochamel Agreement. Mr. Speaker, Rochamel went to court twice. The judge dealt with that issue. But he makes the point that $12.5 million was spent by the government, and he says, what use was that money to the people of Tenusha? Mr. Speaker, I will tell you of what use it was to the people of Tenusha. Mr. Speaker, that hotel, the Sanders Grand Hotel, opened in October. From the year, and I'm using March as a year. From October to March, the hotel spent $17 million impacted into the Tenusha economy. From the 3rd of April to the 4th of March, the other year, $45 million was spent in the solution economy. For the year ended March 2005, $48 million. For the year ended March 2006, $50 million. That initial investment by the government of St. Lucia in that hotel has caused the economy of St. Lucia to benefit by 50 and 48 in 98, 98 and 45 million and 70 million has more than tripled the initial investment of the $12.5 million. And you know what, Mr. Speaker? Over 600 people have daily employment in that hotel. And he speaks about where the who is benefiting from that money. I'll tell you who's benefiting from that money. I'll tell you who. There are people who sell flowers, Mr. Speaker. The electricity, water people who work there. Because the hotel sales in electricity, the end of March, $7 million of electricity, $245,000 of water, property taxes, $257,000, payroll, salaries and wages, and he asked, where does that money go? March 2006, $15 million of salaries and wages paid to St. Lucian, Mr. Speaker, because out of the 600 people working in the hotel, St. Lucian make up the majority. There are over 450 St. Lucians working in the hotel. $15 million, Mr. Speaker, of expenses, of wages, Mr. Speaker. Local bands and entertainers, entertainment, $901 million. Local people who work at the hotel, Mr. Speaker. Garbage collection, $312,000. Staff transportation, the driver that he speaks about when he says the government wants to deal with the drivers and minibus drivers, $538,000. Contract security services, regular people, that is where the tourist dollar goes, security services, $475,000 in 1 year. Night cleaners, the poor people who sweep and clean the hotel at night, $674,000. He asks where the money goes. Charitable relations, $148,000 is the figure. Local purchases, agricultural produce to the farming community, $2 million. Beverages from the local business community, $2.7 million. Other purchases from the local business community, $4.3 million is the figure. Customs duties paid, $1.5 million. Local top suppliers, $3.3 million to the speaker. That is where the money goes as far as the tourism initiatives, as far as the tourism initiatives concerned. That's where the money goes. And he speaks about the trickle down of the tourism industry, Mr. Speaker. No facts. There is no fact. It's not based in logic. It's not based on facts, Mr. Speaker. It's just emotion. Nothing factual, Mr. Speaker. Nothing factual. He goes around and speaks about recurrent expenditure. But Mr. Speaker, I have to excuse him for that one because he probably doesn't understand the economics of the business. Recurrent expenditure and recurrent revenue. The Social and Economic Review on page 5 states that central government fiscal operations improved significantly. The current surplus increased to $83 million, substantiated by growth of receipts from all major tax sources. What that is saying, Mr. Speaker, is the money that the government collected from revenue and the money that they spent, there was a surplus of $83 million. What the member did is he included amortization payments, which are the payments on the long-term loans, which are not a current expense because they were incurred on loans that were there previously, Mr. Speaker. So that's what included, and he comes and he leaves the house on holiday if he added the loan repayments to the current expenditure and says that St. Lucia has a deficit in current account. Mr. Speaker, I think that contribution was, for a maiden contribution, rather disappointing, Mr. Speaker. Filled with emotion, not based in logic, not based in facts, not based in any in any economic soundness, no philosophical soundness. Just, Mr. Speaker, just words, 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 Mr. Speaker. Words. But, Mr. Speaker, we have many important things to deal with, Mr. Speaker, and I just stood your indulgence for a few minutes to deal with some of the issues, because you see, they live here and they feel very big because they've made a point. So I just thought I would just deal with the issues, Mr. Speaker, so that the public of St. Lucia can understand really what is happening in this country and how, if they allow themselves to be taken for a ride, it is not because there is a lack of information, Mr. Speaker. The public should not allow themselves to be taken for a ride. Mr. Speaker, when you speak about the oil import, anyhow, we tell you that already. Mr. Speaker, what is the budget saying for the people of St. Lucia? The budget is saying that there has been a 5.4% growth in the St. Lucia economy. Mr. Speaker, we speak about growth, and we pretend that St. Lucia is an isolated country. We pretend that St. Lucia is isolated in that St. Lucia does not exist in the rest of the world. Mr. Speaker, I'm putting it to you that the price of fuel in the last 24 months has increased from US $23 to US $75 per barrel. These are the circumstances in which the country has experienced growth from US 23% to US $75 per gallon. What this means, Mr. Speaker, is every gallon of gas that the public consumes that is subsidized by the government of the St. Lucia Labour Party. Every gallon of gas that is used is subsidized by the government of the Socialist Party. For a minute, Mr. Speaker, LPG gas, the 20-pound cylinder that the Malawi, that they say that the Malawi uses, Mr. Speaker, every one of them is subsidized by the government of St. Lucia. That is the impact of the cost of fuel on the economy of St. Lucia, the cost of living. When they make the claim, Mr. Speaker, that the cost of fuel has nothing to do with the cost of goods and services. Mr. Speaker, every good and service that is used, including agricultural produce, fuel indirectly affects the cost of these goods and services. So if the price of fuel has increased by 3 times in a period, you must expect the cost of goods and services to increase, Mr. Speaker. What can the government of the St. Lucia Labour Party do about the cost of goods and services, the cost of fuel? Having said so, there was still growth in the economy of 5.4%. And they tell you that you must return to the good old days of the old managers. Mr. Speaker, history. I will give you an analysis, Mr. Speaker, of the growth rate in this country in the good old days of the old managers. 1993, 0.64%. 1994, 2.7%. 1995, 1.03%. 1996, 0.86%. The good old days, when the old boys. 1997, Mr. Speaker, our government, the new government, the refreshing breath of new air. 2.2%. 1998, 3.1%. 1999, 3.1%. The year 2000, 2%. And that is the problem. The year of 9/11. A 9/11 that no one wants to speak about at all. From 9.4%. That was when the economy and the whole world was in depression. 2002, 0.54%. 2003, 3.09%. 2004, 3.99%. And 2005, 5.4%. Who are the better managers of the economy based on growth rates? The facts, not just talk. Facts, Mr. Speaker. Facts. Come, Mr. Speaker, I'll tell you something. 1994, but to address again, because we go to Palestine. And the words of the then Prime Minister, and I quote, "Mr. Speaker, with the economic problems facing St. Lucia and the rest of the Caribbean, it is now absolutely clear that the economy can no longer support the heavy superstructure of high economic costs." I don't know what it means. "The current demand purportedly being made on behalf of civil servants," that was, remember, put a gun on my head, remember that? "The current demand purportedly being made on behalf of public servants, if met, may well turn out to be the last straw that breaks the camel's back and sends us limping into the arms of the IMF. 1994. Restructure or be restructured. 1994, Mr. Speaker, that is sweet. 1994, that is what the then Minister of Finance said, Mr. Speaker. That is what then Minister of Finance said in 1994. But Mr. Speaker, that was the class, 1994. But Mr. Speaker, we have still managed from 1997. In 1994, he was speaking about going returning to the IMF. We took government in 1997. And up to this day, St. Lucia is not in an IMF program, but in fact, the economy has grown by 5.4%. And Mr. Speaker, further, we gave the public servants a 10% increase and paid them $15 million of tax without borrowing 1 cent for that over. Mr. Speaker, how did the country manage to get a 5.4% growth? You know why, Mr. Speaker? By the creative use of incentives. There is increased business confidence in the country. You can see people opening businesses all over the place, small businesses, large businesses, even the biggest critics of the government are expanding, Mr. Speaker. Businesses are opening, buildings, there is a shortage of cement. You cannot get cement, Mr. Speaker. Who is buying the cement? Expansion, signs of the growth, Mr. Speaker, further signs of the growth, Mr. Speaker, is seen in the fact that the government of theirs has been an increase in the savings and fixed deposits in the commercial banks, Mr. Speaker. Savings deposits increased by 12.8% to $1.04 billion. He's asking where is the growth? Fixed deposits increased by 5.8% to $735 million. When added to the other demand deposits, total deposits increased by 13.2% to $2.5 billion at the end of 2005. Evidence of the growth. That is where the growth is, Mr. Speaker. You can see it. It's in the banks, Mr. Speaker. The growth is shown in the reduction in unemployment. And let me add, Mr. Speaker, we agree that unemployment is too high. Even at 15%, we still believe unemployment is too high at 15%. There is need to reduce the unemployment rate. 15% is too high. But the fact is, it's the highest level of employment, the lowest level of unemployment ever in the history of St. Lucia. These are the facts, Mr. Speaker. These are the facts. Even in the banana times, there was never, from 1992, when employment statistics began in St. Lucia, there was never a lower unemployment rate, Mr. Speaker. Where is the growth, Mr. Speaker? The growth is evident, Mr. Speaker, in the liberalization of the telecommunications market. And you may recall, Mr. Speaker, that as far back as 1994, in page 14 and 15 of the budget, they spoke about the cost of telecommunications. And it took this government, Mr. Speaker. And at the time when the government was doing it, I recall there was talk about some of the public company which came out of LS. I don't know if all members remember that. That was the talk that this government was mad. We were crazy in that we tried to do something that we could never succeed in. What we should do is we should form a public company to come out of this. Mr. Speaker, the government had the courage, the foresight, Mr. Speaker, to liberalize the telecommunications market. And look at what happened. The lowering of the cost of communication, Mr. Speaker, a few short years ago to speak to England or the US, a telephone call to England was $3.56. Per minute. Now it's $1.09. You know what they spend on that economy? Cheaper communication. That is why LMIT can expand, and that is why e-services can come to the country and employ more than 100 young people at the, before the end of the year. That is the policies of the government, Mr. Speaker. The policies of the government that has caused the economy to expand, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, you speak about, Mr. Speaker, revenue collection. I have made a point that current revenue increase by $5.95 million this year, Mr. Speaker. There has been an expansion in the money supply. As I said, there has been enhanced business confidence, Mr. Speaker, and increased business profitability because corporation tax revenue increased by 14.2%, Mr. Speaker, because businesses are making more profit, even if the rate of corporation tax is lower. The government is collecting more tax because businesses are making more money, Mr. Speaker, because the economy is expanding. Evidence of the 5.4% growth, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, within even as I speak, Mr. Speaker, the government amended the Electricity Supply Act. And again, they always forget the history. The Electricity Supply Act is an act that we've been asking from. We've been saying that the Electricity Supply Act is bad. We've been saying that the Electricity Supply Act causes the cost of electricity to be too high. They did nothing about it. We amended it. What has that amendment caused? There is $4 million to be redistributed among the productive sectors of the economy, that is manufacturing and tourism, and the majority of the $4 million will go to consumers. The way that they speak about will get a lower electricity bill because of the actions of this government in amending the Electricity Supply Act, Mr. Speaker. That is the work of this government, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, while the economy is expanding, there also is a corresponding expansion in social services, Mr. Speaker. In this budget alone, the government will build a new home for the elderly. The government will continue in the construction and rebuilding of individual houses for the elderly. The government will increase the contribution to care by from $100,000 to $300,000. Economic development happening side by side with social development. The government will deal with the universal healthcare system. The government will build a static construction of one hospital, will build another one. The government has called electrification. And I was glad when I heard the member from Beaufort North talk about electrification, Mr. Speaker. Remember the days when poor people had to pay $6,000 and $8,000 to get a pole for electricity. Each one of these honorable members will recall that poor people to get electricity in the room and have them just as close as Tarbe, Mr. Speaker, when the residents had to pay $6,000 and $8,000 for electricity pole. This government has caused them to get electricity, the connection free of charge because of the government's investment in the quality of life of the people, Mr. Speaker. What did the government do for social development, Mr. Speaker? We gave housing grants. A number of young people can tell you they have benefited from the $25,000 housing grant that the government gave. And now the government is expanding that grant. So if you are young, if you want to build a house, the government will give you $25,000 a grant to Billy House's figure, and they speak about what has the government done for poor people, Mr. Speaker. What the government did for poor people, the social expenditure, the National Skills Development Program, and I'm sure the Minister of Education will deal with that. Teaching young people skills, teaching them to be able to deal in the new economy. That is what the government has done as far as social program is concerned. Mr. Speaker, we hear about debt. And Mr. Speaker, I sat here and I listened with amusement about debt. One would want to believe that debt started with the government of the Social Labour Party. And there was no debt before. There was never any debt. Debt began in 1997, Mr. Speaker. But anyway, I am going to read for you from the budget address of 1995. And listen to the words of the then Prime Minister. 1995. As a result of such borrowings, the total public sector debt, including debt of statutory corporations, stood at $601 million. 1995, the debt stood at $601 million, Mr. Speaker. But they don't want you to believe that debt is something that this government created. Mr. Speaker, the government has made the point that we must watch the level of borrowing. That point is not a new point. We've said that is why this year we borrowed less than previous years. And that is why the government restructured the debt so that we could pay less interest on our debt repayments, because we understand that you have to be prudent in your borrowing. But the fact is, the government does not borrow for current expenditure. The government doesn't borrow to pay civil servants. The government doesn't borrow to pay electricity bills, etc. The government borrows for capital expenditure. That is what the government borrows for. The government borrows to do what? Where does the government borrow from, Mr. Speaker? The government borrows to build new schools. The government borrowed to renovate and upgrade health centers around the island. The government borrowed to upgrade existing and to construct new police and fire stations. The government borrowed to construct human resource development centers. The government borrowed to build new roads and to maintain the existing roads. The government borrowed for disaster mitigation roads. The government borrowed for water sector infrastructure development. Where would the government get the money from for the West Coast Road, for the new roads, the footpaths and the bridges, for the improvement of the water supply, for poverty reduction and basic needs, for waste management and the protection of the environment? That is what the government borrowed from, Mr. Speaker. Each one of these borrowings were for capital expenditure to improve the quality of life of the people of St. Lucia, Mr. Speaker. And further, Mr. Speaker, you must benchmark. St. Lucia has the lowest debt to GDP ratio among the independent countries in the English-speaking Caribbean. The lowest, Mr. Speaker. Not one country, apart from Trinidad and Tobago, has such a low debt ratio, Mr. Speaker. But they make fuss about borrowing. But we have agreed. We have agreed, Mr. Speaker, that the level of borrowing must be watched, and the level of borrowing that the country does, we must look at it carefully, because at some point it can get out of hand, Mr. Speaker. That is what we're saying. But we're saying that we need to borrow so that the country can prosper, so that there can be reinvestment in the economy, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I will deal now with tourism. And I'm very pleased that every member of this Honorable House, if there's one thing we agree on, we agree that tourism is the pillar of the economy of St. Lucia. We all agree that. Some of us don't know enough about it, so we say all kinds of things. But we have agreed that tourism is the pillar of the economy of St. Lucia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, tourism in St. Lucia this year, we had an exceptionally good year, Mr. Speaker. there was an increase in silver visitors, and that increase in silver visitors was accompanied by an increase in the occupancy rate, that is the bed night that the people stay in the country, and it was accompanied by an increase in the money that was spent in the country. Yesterday, we heard figures about tourism marketing, and we heard people say that St. Lucia's increase in numbers was nothing to shout about, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want to make it a document of the House, and I can tell you where it came from. It's from the Caribbean Tourism Organization. It's the latest statistics for 2005. It was published in March 2006. Mr. Speaker, we are going to benchmark St. Lucia with other Caribbean islands. Now, what we're going to use for the benchmark is countries that have spillover arrivals of between 100,000 and 500,000. We're not going to deal with Mexico and Cuba that have million-dollar arrivals. We're going to keep, when you benchmark, you're going to benchmark it within a certain number. And Mr. Speaker, I'll make the document in the House for all those who want to read. They can read, Mr. Speaker. Antigua and Bermuda. Spillover visitors, January to December 2005. Reduction of 2.8%. Aruba, 2.2%. Bahamas, nothing that big, because Bahamas, the visitors are more than a million, but I still use Bahamas. 4.4%. Barbados, 0.7%. Belize, 2.1%. Bermuda, -0.7%. Bonaire, no, too small. Mexico, -8.5%. Cayman Islands, no, there was a hurricane there, so we must despair. We will not deal with Cayman Islands. -35.4%. Grenada, a hurricane, we won't deal with Grenada. Bahamas, -4.4%. Jamaica, 4.5% increase. Martinique, 3% increase. Puerto Rico, too big, but still 2.9%. St. Eustatius, too small. St. Lucia, 6.5% increase in arrivals. St. Lucia experienced the largest increase in arrivals than every other island in the Caribbean.
The honourable member has 15 minutes remaining to make his contribution.
Mr. Speaker, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we speak about cruise passenger arrivals, and they will make you appear that this government is doing something wrong. That is why there was a decrease in cruise passenger arrivals. Again, Mr. Speaker, I will make a document of the House. But before I get to cruise passenger arrivals, Mr. Speaker, I want to inform Mr. Speaker that the percentage change in winter for St. Lucia was the highest increase than any country, the highest increase than any country except St. Vincent and Grenadines and Suriname in winter. And these countries, they only attract 71,000 people. So they're not ready in our league, Mr. Speaker. St. Lucia, the change, 19.6% increase in winter arrivals in St. Lucia. Again, the highest winter increase in the entire region, Mr. Speaker, because of the tourism policies of this government. Well, Mr. Speaker, we speak about cruise, and again, they will make you believe that there is a reduction in the cruise business because of the government or the Social Party, something we call cruise passenger business, Mr. Speaker, from the same document, the CCO document. Here's what it says, Mr. Speaker. Barbados, -22% cruise business arrivals. -22%. St. Lucia, -18%, Mr. Speaker. Every island, Mr. Speaker. British Virgin Islands, the mecca of the cruise industry, -3.7%. The mecca, -3.7%, Mr. Speaker. Every country experienced reductions in cruise passenger arrivals, Mr. Speaker. Barbados, 22%, because of the structure. that is how it's always been called in the world. It's not dictated from events happening in St. Lucia. It's dictated from events happening outside of St. Lucia, Mrs. Vigor. So the change in the structure, and again, caused also by increases in the price of fuel. Because what cruisers found that it was cheaper to drive to a port in the United States than to fly to Puerto Rico to catch a cruise in Puerto Rico. Because the cost of the airline ticket was too expensive because of the increase in the cost of fuel. Something that we have absolutely no control of, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, I have some good news for you, and I have some good news for the taxi drivers and the people who depend on the cruise industry, Mr. Speaker. And speaking about cruising, the cruise industry, there is no debate, Mr. Speaker, on whether it's cruise or silver visitors. St. Lucia must have both. We need silver visitors and we need cruise passengers. So there is no debate as far as I'm concerned about the two. But Mr. Speaker, I have some good news for you. I want to tell you, Mr. Speaker, that commencing January 2007, the Carnival Destiny will make all year-round calls to St. Lucia commencing January 2007. The itinerary of the Carnival Legend has been confirmed and is on the internet. The first trip will be on January the 7th, 2007. The Carnival Destiny will continue, will recommend year-round trips to St. Lucia, Mr. Speaker. And further, Mr. Speaker, 2006-2010, it is projected that we will have 546,000 cruise passengers, the highest ever in St. Lucia's cruise tourism industry. This projected performance will represent an increase of approximately 45% over 2005-2006. The previous highest recorded performance was 528,000 in the year 2001-2002. So I have good news for the people who depend on the cruise industry, good news for the taxi drivers who will give the incentives so that they can improve the quality of the service and the quality of the vehicles that they use to transport our tourists, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there is even better news. And Mr. Speaker, I want to inform you that the Norwegian cruise line has confirmed a recruitment in St. Lucia on May 22nd through May 24th, where Mr. Christian Wendorf, Director of Recruitment, will visit St. Lucia and along with their local agents will conduct interviews for employment. Norwegian Cruise Lines indicate that they are targeting 300 suitable candidates in St. Lucia for the following positions. So, Mr. Speaker, come May the 22nd, we hope that the children of the displaced farmers, the young people who leave school, will have an opportunity for an interview to work in the cruise industry, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there's a lot of discussion on tourism and whether tourism is fickle, whether tourism benefits local people. And Mr. Speaker, discussions, as far as I'm concerned, these discussions are necessary, but they must be substantiated by facts, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, let me deal with the ownership of the hotels in this country. You heard the Minister of Cashes tell you that the hotels in this country are owned by foreigners. Never mentioned which hotel was by foreigners. But by foreigners and all-inclusive hotels. For your information, Mr. Speaker, let me tell you about the pattern of ownership of hotels in St. Lucia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm going to name for you 22 hotels. Twenty-two hotels, Mr. Speaker, large and small, in St. Lucia. And each one of these hotels are owned either by St. Lucia Nationals or Nationals of CARICOM. Fact, Mr. Speaker. Poverty surfing solutions. Vegan solutions. Vegan skin solutions. Body horizontal spot solutions. Coco Creole solutions. Coco Palm solutions. Coconut Bay Resort, Jamaican, Typhoon. Fox Grove Inn solution. Harmony Suite solution. Jalousie Plantation Resort solution. Sanders Chain, Caribbean Nationals. That's Still Beach Restaurant solution. Still Plantation Resort solution. Stonefield Estate Villa Resort solution. Tikai Village solution. Tropical Green solution. Tuxedo Villas. They benefit from tourism too. Tuxedo, I won't tell you who the solution is. Tuxedo Village. Tuxedo Villa solution. Villa Beach Cottages solution. Alaman Hotel. CARICOM this week. Now, the hotels that have been built in St. Lucia. Vegan Suite solution. Vegan Beach Resort solution. Plantation Beach Resort solution shareholders. The Landing on Rodney Bay solution shareholders. Cannes on Cotton Bay solution shareholders. Palm Heaven Inn solution. Where is the pattern for foreign ownership in the hotel for solution?
The honourable member has 5 minutes left to make his contribution.
Speaker, I beg to move that the standing order 3210 be invoked to permit the honourable minister for tourism an additional hour within which to complete his very significant contribution to the debate in this honourable house, Speaker.
Honourable members, the question is that standing order 3210 be invoked to allow the Honourable Minister an additional 1 hour to make his contribution. I now put the question, as many are of that opinion, say aye.
Aye.
As many are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Honourable Minister, leave is granted.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mario Michel, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, thank you very much, all members. So, Mr. Speaker, the pattern of hotel ownership in St. Lucia have outlined it. And I'm not dealing with the small hotels and the inns and the villas and the condominiums. I'm just dealing with just a sample of the large hotels of the large hotels in St. Lucia. And I've showed you by documentary proof, Mr. Speaker, that they are owned and run and managed by St. Lucia's Speaker. Not speaking about the people who operate the heritage stores. Again, Mr. Speaker, there is talk about tourism doesn't trickle down. This government and my colleague worked with me on that issue. The heritage stores, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there are 13 heritage sites in St. Lucia that have been assisted by the St. Lucia Heritage Tourism Program from the inception of the program. 13 sites, Mr. Speaker. All these sites are owned by St. Lucians and they exist in areas away from the center of tourism, which is the north of the country. The benefits, Mr. Speaker. Only recently, a month ago, we opened the aerial tram ride in Babylon. Tourism investment coming to Babylon, Mr. Speaker, because of the government's policy of spreading the benefits of tourism and causing the ancillary services to reach as many people as possible, Mr. Speaker. And I'm very proud to be the Minister of Investment and preside over that together with the government and my colleagues in the solution of that. Of the 14 sites, Mr. Speaker, I just want to throw a few of them for you. Fon, La Salle, Creole Park and Babano, Castage Heritage Rock and Castries, Fordon Nature Historic Park, Fondo Estate, Manico Gardens, Eastern Nature Trail, Mr. Speaker, and the Crave Indulgence for mentioning these companies, Mr. Speaker, because it is time the truth comes to light. There's too much misinformation in St. Lucia. Too much misinformation. Latil Waterfalls in Prale, Eastern Nature Trail in Prale, Forest State Tropical Forest Trail, Bella Bush Estate in Chotel, Toral Waterfalls, Anteret Seafood Friday, La Quest Visitor Stop Center, Mandeli Visitor Stop Center, Mr. Speaker, and serious services away from
solution, Mr. Speaker, and civil service away from castries, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, they speak about tourism, Mr. Speaker, and the economic impact on tourism, Mr. Speaker. I'm putting to you that the statistics record $961 million for the $26 million marketing fund that I spent in St. Lucia. And that $26 million, Mr. Speaker, comprises of direct marketing and also administrative expenses, Mr. Speaker. So the $26 million has to be divided between direct marketing and administration, Mr. Speaker. And this government, we have increased the subvention, as is written in our contract of faith. In 1997, Mr. Honorable Speaker was given $11,941,000. That we have increased it from what they were getting in 1996, which is about $9 or $8 million. In 2005, the tourist board was given subvention by the government of $24 million, Mr. Speaker, in 1995. And the tourist board, we have presented this all over the house. And Mr. Speaker, the chairman of the tourist board is a chartered accountant, so accountability is the name of the game. We have presented our audited report and financial statements to the Honourable House, Mr. Speaker, to account for the money that we got to market tourism in St. Lucia. And out of that $24 million, we spent $16 million on marketing, Mr. Speaker. We paid administration expenses of $5 million. We paid low interest. So because we had to get involved in some financial restructuring when I became minister in 1997. We had part of the payables of the service board, payables that we inherited. We had part of these payables and we took a loan for which we are paying $282,000, Mr. Speaker, and $16 million in marketing, $5 million on administration, and $298,000 on interest, Mr. Speaker. That is how the $26 million from the St. Lucia Tourist Board is being spent, Mr. Speaker. And I'll put to you, Mr. Speaker, that St. Lucia, if you have to calculate visitor expenditure, if you have to put a total amount of money we spend on marketing and divide the amount of visitors that come to St. Lucia, you will find that St. Lucia has the lowest per capita in expenditure per student visitor. Because the St. Lucia Tourist Board, we use our resources wisely, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, about the St. Lucia Tourist Board, we are beginning a new advertising consumer campaign in the UK, in the US. We hope to go to the UK shortly, Mr. Speaker, and that advertising campaign comprises of 878 TV spots on Turner Broadcasting TV, and I want to thank the Rotary Tourism Association, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there is no conflict between the Ministry of Tourism and the Rotary Tourism Association. Sometimes there are differences in opinion. That is laudable. But there is no conflict, Mr. Speaker. Both the Solution of Tourism Association and the St. Lucia Tourist Board and the Ministry of Tourism and the Governor of St. Lucia, we are united in one for one goal for the betterment of tourism and for the betterment of the tourism industry in St. Lucia. So that tourism can be used as a tool for wealth creation and poverty reduction. That is what we are united in, Mr. Speaker. Opinions may differ on certain issues. It is our belief that the Jazz Festival must remain an activity, not a concert. It's our belief, and the figures show, Mr. Speaker, that more St. Lucians get to know about St. Lucia for the Jazz Festival than through any other media. That is why, Mr. Speaker, more visitors get to know about St. Lucia for the Jazz Festival than any other media. That is why the figures for arrival in the Jazz Festival, they are increasing every year. And as we speak, Mr. Speaker, you cannot book a hotel room in St. Lucia in the month of May, or part of the month of May, because of the St. Lucia Jazz Festival, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, advertising, marketing in the U.S., we have, again, I said I want to thank the hotels for getting involved in the consumer advertising campaign. Mr. Speaker, we have a plan, the media plan with Turner broadcasting with the speaker. We have a media behind them, and it's based using TV ads developed by an agency using the Joe Crocker song, You Are So Beautiful. And this will be seen in 30 cities, in 30 cities in the following states: Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, South Carolina, and North Carolina, Mr. Speaker. Again, an effort between the SNC and the government of Nusha and the Solution Service Board. There will be radio promotions in Atlanta. There's a half-page ad in the New York Times travel section. That ad was on the weekend of 24th, 26th, 2006. Mr. Speaker, there's a freestanding insert, and I want to make that document out at some point, Mr. Speaker, to show you that freestanding insert was published in March 2006, and there were 400,000 copies in the New York Times on Sunday, and it's also distributed in selected zip codes, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, we have an Expedia campaign which was launched on March 27, and there's a special online promotion of Expedia focused on the New York Tri-State area in support of the new Air Jamaica flight, Mr. Speaker. That is some of the activity that the St. Lucia Tourist Board is doing in New York to promote St. Lucia, so to sustain the increased numbers that we are seeing, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in terms of yachting, the member for Mykonos tried to downplay government's contribution. I want to announce to you, Mr. Speaker, and to honorable members, that I have documentary proof that that there's going to be a new round the island yacht race. And I read, starting from St. Lucia in January, the World ARC will offer a round the island yacht race starting in St. Lucia. And it starts in St. Lucia on the 30th of January, and it ends in St. Lucia because it's a round the island race that begins and ends in St. Lucia on February, sometime in February, Mr. Speaker. And that, Mr. Acting Speaker, Mr. Speaker, and that again is good news for the yachting industry, in that St. Lucia will have another activity to complement the ARC in that happens in December, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we speak about benefits and tourism. I want to inform our members that we started a new tourism certification program, and 70 taxi drivers, Mr. Speaker. And these taxi drivers come from all over the country. These 70 taxi drivers were given duty-free incentives valued at $2.5 million. $2.5 million worth of duty-free incentives for these taxi drivers to increase and to improve the quality of their fleet, Mr. Speaker. Plus, Mr. Speaker, we have given incentives because we use incentives to generate economic activity. We give incentives, Mr. Speaker, to scores of solutions who want to buy boats, who want to go into the diving business. Scores of solutions, Mr. Speaker, we have given them incentives. Scores of small hotels, Mr. Speaker. So incentives are not only for the large hotels, incentives are for small hotels, Mr. Speaker. And shortly, the Prime Minister has given more incentives to the car rental sector. Mr. Speaker, we tell Mr. Speaker that tourism is creating linkages with other sectors of the economy. And I'm working with my colleague from Minister of Agriculture to cause more local food to be purchased in the hotels, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, but as we speak, what is going on in that direction, and as the Minister told you, we are sure that the hotels are convinced that they must buy more local food. But there are some structural problems, Mr. Speaker, which the Ministry of Agriculture and the Ministry of Tourism and the Hotel and Tourism Association are working on, Mr. Speaker. In terms of manufacturing, Mr. Speaker, I'm very pleased to tell you that a manufacturing concern in St. Lucia, they were the ones who manufactured the bed for a major hotel investment in Tanusha. The mattresses, the speaker of a local firm working with the ministry, the manufacturing association, I speak about the manufacturing of the speaker, were able to provide goods of particular quality with the speaker so that it could be used in an international hotel in Tanusha. And I'm very proud and very pleased about that, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I have dealt with issues of investment, Mr. Speaker, and I'm putting it to you that never before in the history of Tanusha there's been so much interest in the tourism industry. There's been so much people want to invest, Mr. Speaker. And talking about investment, they make the point sometimes that the tourism industry is only for the foreigner. I'll prove that that's wrong. They also made the point that it's not for the small man. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Acting Speaker, there is a bill which this government passed, which is called the Hotel Accommodation Act, Mr. Speaker, which allows and gives incentives to people who want to improve or want to add rooms to their house, to their houses, so that they can cause it to be ready to welcome visitors for Cricket World Cup. So if you want to add two or more bedrooms to your house, one to meet the required incentives, this government gives you the required standard. This government gives you incentives so that we can continue to spread the benefits of the tourism industry, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I spoke about beach access, and there's a lady who my colleague knows well, a lady called Ms. Marjorie Lambert, who has been able to lease government property so that she can get some benefits from the tourism industry, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, finally, on tourism, they speak about employment, Mr. Speaker, and they tell you the only jobs that are available in tourism are menial jobs. You heard this backward word used by the member. It hurt my heart, Mr. Speaker. Why in 2006 we can still use words like menial jobs when it comes to hard-working men and women in the tourism industry in Tanusha, Mr. Speaker? Earn a decent living, Mr. Speaker. Working hard, trying to build up their improve the quality of life, still referred to as menial jobs, Mr. Speaker. I put it to you, Mr. Speaker, that there are many other things that are menial, and one of them is not work in the tourism industry. But we have had fun, and we had a show, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the measurement, Mr. Speaker, the tourism statistics, the value of tourism to the economy is measured only by the contribution of hotels and restaurants in the GDP of Tanusha, Mr. Speaker. But there are several other aspects of tourism employment, Mr. Speaker. There are persons who benefit directly and indirectly. The persons who work in the airlines benefit from tourism. Immigration custom officers benefit from tourism, Mr. Speaker. Our visitors need to eat and drink. Restaurants. I didn't even speak about the incentives government gives to restaurants, both large and small restaurants, so that they can improve the quality of their product, Mr. Speaker. There are entertainers. And again, Mr. Speaker, this government in this budget gives generous incentives to entertainers so they can improve, they can record, they can buy new equipment so they can, as the minister told you, so they can improve. They can improve their service for the tourism industry. Because it's all about service, Mr. Speaker. There are handicrafts, people who make handicrafts. And again, you will see that the Tanusha's manufacturing output also includes handicraft items, and that has increased because of the increase in the tourism industry, Mr. Speaker. There are people, there are craftsmen. There are people who do the tours. The people who own the tours and people who conduct the tours, talk right, Mr. Speaker. They are bus drivers, they are site operators, they are maintenance personnel, Mr. Speaker. There are people who work in the front office, the people who work in the computers, the electricians, maintenance people, they are accountants, they are clerks, they are receptionists, Mr. Speaker. They are managers, food and beverage experts, and they are chefs, Mr. Speaker. That quality, high quality employment that comes from the tourism industry, Mr. Speaker. And 12,000 people are employed in the tourism industry, which is about 20% of our labor force, Mr. Speaker. And these people, the multiplier effect, and that is why there is such an increase in construction, that's why there is increase in profits from firms, because these people get riches, they own riches, and they improve the quality of their life in the sector. There are people who work in the retail outlets, people who work in the telecommunication companies, they are hairdressers, people who do other services to tourists, for tourists. For tourism speaker, all these people, water sports people, a whole new generation of artisans, a whole new generation of employment that is created because of the tourism industry, Mr. Speaker. Hairdressers, people dealing with massages, body people, Mr. Speaker, a whole new type of investment because of tourism industry, Mr. Speaker. But Mr. Speaker, we are doing well in industry, but there's a lot more for us to do, Mr. Speaker. Because there's one thing that I want to remember to note, that tourism is about competition. The tourism industry is global, Mr. Speaker. And what you must note is that the places from which we source our tourists, these people themselves are involved in the tourism business. So our tourists come from North America, and North America itself is involved in tourism. So there is internal tourism within the people, the countries where we source our tourists from. So we cannot rest on our laurels. We must constantly improve our service. There is no St. Lucian standard, Mr. Speaker. There is a world standard. There is an international standard, Mr. Speaker. We must improve our service, Mr. Speaker. And talking about service, the crime and visitor harassment in St. Lucia must stop. There must be zero tolerance, Mr. Speaker, towards visitor harassment and crime against visitors and against locals. It's not only crime against visitors, there should be zero tolerance. And the people who make a country, the people who make a living from tourism, must not only depend on the government and the police to protect our visitors. They themselves must help in the protection of our business. And I'm speaking at all levels, Mr. Speaker, from the owners of property to the taxi drivers who see tourists and locals being harassed and they sit idly by and laugh, some of them. Each one of us must make it our duty to protect the dollar that comes from the tourism industry. And if you protect your visitors, you will naturally protect solutions also. Because if there is no crime, there is no crime against both visitors and solutions, Mr. Speaker. So we have to take that personal responsibility for the safety of ourselves and the safety of our visitors. But the members of the crime agencies in solution must also play the part, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, finally on tourism, I want to tell you about a little about the competition, Mr. Speaker. And you see, sometimes we laugh when we speak about competition. We laugh and they tell you that, oh, let's talk about St. Lucia, let's talk about other countries. As if St. Lucia is in isolation, as if St. Lucia just exists as a little block, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, China, I can make a document of the house for you from the eTurbo News, which is a document from the tourism industry. Here's what it says. China tourism waiting to exile. China! That is the competition. And when you have foolishness, China is one of the fastest developing tourism economies in the world. Travel and tourism projected total GDP 2006 is projected at 11.8% with the overall share of jobs placed at 8.6%. That is the competition, Mr. Speaker, that we have to deal with. China. So, Mr. Speaker, I want to tell the people of St. Lucia that this government is committed to the tourism industry. There is nothing in our history that shows us not committed to the tourism industry. We understand the importance of tourism. This minister understands the value of tourism, Mr. Speaker. And we hope, Mr. Speaker, that the gains that we have achieved, when these gains begin to materialize, when all these hotels are built and people are employed, other people will not be allowed to enjoy it. Because we are the ones doing the hard work, Mr. Speaker, and they want to reap it. but the people of Seleucia will not allow them to repeat. They will not allow them to reap the hard work that you have put in this country to get hotels in Pralé. I don't know, you may recall there are two concrete pillars somewhere in Mipo. Mr. Speaker, you may recall, Mr. Speaker, that there are two pillars somewhere in Miku. And if you look at here, you see, Mr. Speaker, you saw that at that time they promised us a hotel in Miku. I think the one member from Miku was probably still a young man. That was so long ago, Mr. Speaker. You remember that? You remember that, you can speak the truth, you will not say anything. You will not disturb that you remember me to know. So you're right. Mr. Speaker, you remember they came and they promised us a hotel in Miku, by the way. Remember? They have two big pillars there up to now. Up to now, Mr. Speaker. Yvonne Landa, is it?
That is in the year
1991, Mr. Speaker. Oh my God. What else? 1991, Mr. Speaker. And they want to downplay the environment we have created to cause such massive hotel investments in the mutual business. Listen to that. During the course of the year, there will be start in hotel construction and at Anse South in Beaufort. They have a hotel there, right? Anse South in Beaufort. A joint venture of the National Development Corporation and a Venezuelan company. At Trumase in Miku, that's a new hotel, with private capital. At Rodney Bay in Grosley with French capital. And also at Rodney Bay with American capital. The Pullman Hotel at Shock Bay will be completed and become operational during the fourth quarter of 1991. Third quarter. Pullman Hotel in Shock Bay. And they want to downgrade this government's performance. Never before, Mr. Speaker. So many new hotels have been built in Seleucia. Never before, both large and small. And you can see for yourself, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, our history on tourism, our evidence of tourism growth is clear and can be seen by everyone, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I also have the responsibility for manufacturing. And Mr. Speaker, manufacturing output expanded by 10.2%. to 156 million and accounted for 5.5% of GDP. Mr. Speaker, I want to pay tribute to a former Minister of Commerce who happens to be the member of SUFRA, Mr. Speaker, because when he was Minister in 1997, he inherited a manufacturing sector in decline. You see, again, the history, Mr. Speaker. When we came to government in 1997, the manufacturing sector was already in decline. Albeit not because of a situation in the local economy, but a situation where labor was cheaper outside and the footloose industries, the footloose government that the members of the castries wants to speak about and say that it is we the ones who caused it. Bell fashion, hotels. Mr. Speaker, but he forgot to tell you that we gave the Bell Fashion workers our back pay. Quite different to what happened to them. Mr. Speaker, it's a history to them. In 1998, when the Bell Fashion factory closed, this government, this minister, this prime minister, no, he wasn't there. That one. We gave our back pay to the Bell Fashion workers. All of our back pay, Mr. Speaker. But you know what they did? When you left government, you weren't there. So, but it's your friends. when you left in 1997, you had a cabinet conclusion just before 1997.
Just before the election.
Thank you very much, Minister. The cabinet meeting before the election, you weren't there, but you gave yourself back pay, leave pay. What can I say of you? You paid, you made a cabinet conclusion, and we paid you, Mr. Speaker. We paid you. Mr. Deputy Speaker, we paid you. He was there too. The Deputy Speaker, he lost his back pay too. Mr. Speaker, that's the evidence. That is the evidence that they want us to forget. And that's why they want to deal with me. But the people of sense of casualties will protect me. So, Mr. Speaker, the manufacturing sector, when we came in 1997, the manufacturing sector was in decline because of the wage rate, Mr. Speaker. And I'll put it to you, that I had the opportunity to speak to an investor, and he was talking about wage rates, and said we should have lost the investment because he was telling me that he could get wage, he could get people to work for him in other parts of the world for between $1 and $2 per day. Per day. That's what we have to compete with. So of course, these factories must close. But that is the real world. That is the real world. That is why governance and experience and tact and expertise is so important in the realm of government today. Yes, you cannot run government with emotion. You cannot run government with shouting and being a populist scene. You cannot run government by just saying things that sound good. You cannot run government like that. The world is too technical. There's too much competition. There's too many intricate matters that you have to deal with in government for you to deal with it by making noise and collecting garbage. Mr. Speaker, so the manufacturing industry was already in decline. What did we do, Mr. Speaker? What did we do to bring it up to a level where it's accounting for 5.7% of GDP, Mr. Speaker? First of all, Mr. Speaker, we developed the free zone. We negotiated with the Chinese government, with the then foreign minister, Minister Odlum, and the government said, sure, we got the free zone, Mr. Speaker. What is it, Mr. Speaker? We developed the micro, and again, you, Mr. Speaker, I know you know who was involved in that, in the Micro and Small Business Act, Mr. Speaker. To create an awareness of local produce, we, in 1998, we launched a bi-local campaign with the Minister of Agriculture and Tourism to create an awareness. That is why food and beverages now account for the largest part of manufacturing output in St. Lucia because of that awareness that we created for local food and beverage industry. In 1999, Mr. Speaker, the invention of the Ministry of Commerce, we amended the Customs Service Act of 1998, granting the waiver of the payment of customs service charge on all classes of raw and packaging materials imported by local manufacturers for use in their manufacturing process. We removed all service charges. All service charges. This was a deliberate policy, Mr. Speaker, in aim at increasing the level of price competitiveness of the domestic manufacturing sector. Again, in 1999, Mr. Speaker, with the help of the Ministry of Finance, we amended the Environmental Protection Levy to exempt from the payment of environmental levy all classes of raw and packaging materials imported for the manufacturing process. Again, a deliberate policy intervention to reduce the price or the cost of manufacturing, Mr. Speaker. We tried to sell our products abroad. So we conducted a trade mission to Trinidad and Tobago, working in collaboration with the Royal Bank of Trinidad and Tobago, Mr. Speaker. In 2001, we approved a national industrial policy for St. Lucia, the first one of its type. This document outlines the critical industrial sectors and highlights the sectors with potential for growth in an environment based on competition, Mr. Speaker. That same year, Mr. Speaker, we introduced the consumption tax retooling allowance. And again, the member for SUFRE was intimately involved in that retooling allowance. That retooling allowance, Mr. Speaker, would be for manufacturers who undertake capital upgrading and retooling of plants and equipment so that they can improve the quality of the goods that they produce. Deliberate policy decisions aimed at the manufacturing sector. Deliberate interventions with the plans so that manufacturing could be with the competition with this figure, because people tell you about protection. There can be no protection again. The days of protection are over. Although this government will still have a degree of protection for the system of import licenses, but these days of protection are over. So you need to compete, and that is why we developed the Bureau of Standards, which I'll speak to a little later, Mr. Speaker. But the retooling allowance, it caused manufacturers to buy new plants and equipment so they can prepare for the competition, for the commission, Mr. Speaker. We developed a handicraft development strategy because the industrial policy mandated us to find linkages between tourism and manufacturing, and we fought the handicraft industry because Indonesia had already had a handicraft industry, but the best way was a starting point from which we could launch a proper and sustained handicraft sector, Mr. Speaker. But Mr. Speaker, we could not only serve ourselves. So rapidly in 2003, we commenced work on a national export strategy, working in collaboration with the Chamber of Commerce, because in that ministry, Mr. Speaker, we work with all the private sector bodies. We work so much in the Chamber of Commerce that one of them wants to take my seat. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, we work with this, but Mr. Speaker, but you know that's a wish. That's a wish.
Okay,
that's how we work so much with them, Mr. Speaker. We work with the Hotel Tourism Association. We work with them with us. The Nusha Manufacturing Association. It was at my instance, at my calling, that the manufacturer, when I spoke at the Ville Boutel Secondary School at an exhibition, when I called on manufacturers to form a manufacturers association. And that manufacturing was in the care of the hands of Mr. Laurie Bernard, one of St. Lucia's leading industrialists, and the Ernest and Young Entrepreneur of the Year. He was the one who inaugurated that manufacturing association, Mr. Speaker, and now it's led by Mr. Keith Smith, another young industrialist who is involved in the export business, Harry Spain, an export-ready company, Mr. Speaker. These men pioneered together the executive, the manufacturing association, and we worked closely with them, and that dialogue that has caused us to have these increases in manufacturing, Mr. Speaker. So we developed the national export strategy, Mr. Speaker. We work in collaboration with the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development and the St. Lucia Chamber of Commerce. Mr. Speaker, we also worked on the business environment report. What we wanted to do was we wanted to look at all the issues that dealt with businesses in Lucia and prepare a document which we will be able to take in cabinet that says what is the ideal environment for business to operate in Lucia. And we used to work with the OECD in the preparation of that document. What we have to do, and hopefully before the end of that term, we will bring to this House an amendment in the consumption tax. The consumption tax allows, Mr. Speaker, manufacturers, they pay consumption tax on the wholesale price. And we are saying that causes problems for competition because the manufacturers have to pay a tax on the profit that already exists in the wholesale price. Let me explain to you, Mr. Speaker. When the manufacturer sells something at wholesale price, he already has his profit in there. And the tax that he pays is based on that profit. We are saying, and the cost, we are saying that the consumption tax should only be based on the ex factory cost. That means you remove the element of profit and the consumption tax is only based on the ex factory cost. That will make him competitive, because when goods are imported from overseas, Mr. Speaker, the manufacturer of the overseas product does not pay tax in St. Lucia on his profits, because he has sold the goods to the supplier with a profit. So we're looking to change that, and work is progressing with the Ministry of Finance so that we can change that, so we can charge the tax on the money on the ex factory cost instead of on the wholesale price. It is because we are also working on new areas of manufacturing. We're working on fashion, the fashion and the fashion designing area. Because we believe that we can produce goods, clothes, garments of good quality for our tourists to be able to buy, to wear here and to wear when you go to the country. And we are using the example of Jamaica. Jamaica has a very vibrant garment industry, garments for tourists, Mr. Speaker. And then a delegation from the ministry visited Jamaica to learn from Jamaican experience, and this year we intend to work on that experience so that we can, some of the people who got displaced from the footloose garment industry can get jobs in the new garment industry, where we will be preparing or will be manufacturing instant visual garments, specialized garments for the visitor and the solution, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the manufacturing sector is also, many small businesses are involved in the manufacturing sector, Mr. Speaker. And the government has given incentives, process incentives for several small businesses. We have trained nearly 200 persons in small business management so that they can improve their skills, so that they can expand their knowledge, so that they can produce, they can have thousands of small businesses. We did that through CEDU, we did that through the EU, and we're doing that for the grant that the Prime Minister has mentioned in his budget. The grant from the NDC, where the NDC, Mr. Speaker, is doing good work in terms of investment promotion, Mr. Speaker. The NDC will give grants, will give loans to small businesses, coupled with the loans that come from other sources, Mr. Speaker. Because we believe that there is room for small business intervention, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in the ministry we have an investment coordination division, investment facilitation, a one-stop shop that will help, that will work with the NDC to help investors, to bring them through the different levels of the government systems, Mr. Speaker. And one of the most notable jobs or the most notable achievements of that investment coordination department is facilitation of investors in the Hotel Chocola estate. A classical investment that links agriculture with tourism, Mr. Speaker. The group of investors, they purchased 140-acre cocoa estate, Rablo estate in Sufre, and the project, the Rablo estate in Sufre, Mr. Speaker, and it will be the first chocolate producer in St. Lucia that uses local cocoa. So we'll plant the government plant in St. Lucia and we'll manufacture. So we'll add value. We'll take it from the raw material stage and bring it to a finished product, Mr. Speaker. And that is an investment that the Ministry of Agriculture will work together with the Ministry of Tourism and the Ministry of Commerce, Mr. Speaker. And they hopefully, the founders of Hotel Chocola, they tell us that they will be able to produce a special chocolate for Cricket World Cup 2007, Mr. Speaker. And the production has already started. It started on April 24th, Mr. Speaker, and the investment is estimated at $37.6 million. Investment in agro industry and agro manufacturing, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, for the future, we intend to implement the export development strategy. We intend to review and modernize selected regulations governing business operations in St. Lucia, and that is why we will look at the laws, and that is why, Mr. Speaker, in the next session of the House, we are dealing with the Consumer Credit Act. The Consumer Credit Act will replace the old Higher Purchase Ordinance of 1974, where the rights of people who buy goods from higher purchasers. We are examining this right. And the new Consumer Credit Act will outline clearly the rights of the customer and the rights of the producer. modern legislation so that people who buy things from the higher purchase companies will not be unduly exploited. New legislation, and if you look at the other paper, Mr. Speaker, it's called the Consumer Credit Act, Mr. Speaker. Speaking about new legislation, Mr. Speaker, I made the call some time ago for the banks to stop charging customers for the piece of paper that they give them at the end of the year that says you've paid X amount of interest and Y amount of payment. I made a call, Mr. Speaker. I must tell you, the banks did not reply. And some people laughed at me. I didn't know what I was doing. But I was very pleased, Mr. Speaker, that a commercial bank last month, they told the public of St. Lucia that they will stop charging them for the paper that they give them with their interest, Mr. Speaker. That bank was the Bank of St. Lucia. I want to congratulate them, and I want to ask all banks, and I want to make that call to them again, that it is unfair to charge people $25 for a record of the payment of their interest. That is unfair, and I'm calling them to follow the footsteps of the Bank of St. Lucia and stop what, to my mind, is an excessive charge, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in the period, in the new period, Mr. Speaker, as I said, we'll implement the new consumption tax regime. We'll help prepare the manufacturing sector for Cricket World Cup, and we will deal with the national export strategy. Mr. Speaker, we are going to amend the Fiscal Incentives Act, the act that gives government, that gives businesses concessions. We're going to amend it to bring it more in tune with modern legislation. Because the act was a 1974 act, and it dealt with all the modes of production that no longer exist. It dealt with, as I said, the footloose garment industry. Now, all manufacturing is going to be services, as seen by the e-services, by Sitel, and by LNIC. So we have to bring the legislation in place to deal with that, but that legislation must be WTO compatible. And that is why we sought the assistance of the Commerce Secretariat, and they are helping us in a new Fiscal Incentive Act, which is compatible with the WTO, and which hopefully we'll be able to bring to this Honorable House in the next period, when we win the next general elections. Mr. Speaker, part of the work of the ministry is the CARICOM single market economy, and St. Lucia has satisfied the free legal obligations to make it a full member of the CARICOM single market and economy. We've signed the revised treaty. The treaty has been ratified and is now being enacted into domestic law. St. Lucia has implemented all four phases of tariff reduction in the common external tariff. This was done in 1994. We are still waiting for the finalization of the CARICOM Development Fund, and it's the government's position that that fund must come into place before St. Lucia is a full signatory on the CSME, Mr. Speaker. This is, Mr. Speaker, discussions on how are St. Lucians ready for the CSME? Have St. Lucians been given enough information on the CSME? The ministry has made presentations to private firms, to hotels, to banks and other institutions, like trade unions, the credit union movement, the employers' federation, nurse association, mothers and fathers group, at both the community level and at the church level. In giving that information, Mr. Speaker. Capital information also in the form of leaflets, articles in the press, discussions on radio and TV in both Creole and English, Mr. Speaker. And these are ongoing, and we hope to continue them as we get closer to the CSME, Mr. Speaker. We also have embarked on a new mode of information dissemination, which is called the CSME Roadshow, in which staff of the ministry go to every major community on the island to engage people directly in discussion on the CSME and provide information on the CSME, Mr. Speaker. The roadshow has been to communities like Ansari, Canaries, Supra and Shrozel, and the next stop is Labri, where we will be telling the people of Labri about the CSME. Mr. Speaker, so you can see clearly, Mr. Speaker, that the manufacturing sector, again, is performing, and not performing by chance, were performing because of direct policy intervention and because of the policies of this government, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, another success story in my ministry is the Bureau of Standards, Mr. Speaker. The Bureau of Standards, which is run by a young lady called Dr. Alison Plummer, Mr. Speaker. The Bureau of Standards, Mr. Speaker, is has changed the landscape as far as standardization and quality control in St. Lucia, Mr. Speaker. And the Bureau of Standards is a central revolution, Mr. Speaker. The Bureau of Standards has been involved in the compulsory standard compliance program introduced in 2002 and is designed to ensure that the products retailed on the market conform to acceptable standards pertaining to health, safety, performance and labeling. It also ensures fairness of trade for local manufacturers who often suffer from the effects of the importation of substandard products in the sector. The Bureau of Standards is also involved in the metrology program, which ensures that there is equity in trade, which means, Mr. Speaker, that measurements, weight and measures, so you do not buy something that's supposed to be 2 kilos and find that it's 1.5 kilos. The Bureau of Standards ensures that you get the weight for what you pay for. The Bureau of Standards also verifies gas pumps, Mr. Speaker, and so much so that a success in the area has led the Bureau to get an award as the best gas pump verification program in the Eastern Caribbean. And people from the Bureau, they go to other islands to assist their bureaus in the calibration of gas meters and gas pumps, Mr. Speaker. The Bureau also supports consumer interest in LPG cylinders that I spoke to you about, and electricity and water metering. The Bureau ensures that what comes through, what is sold to the consumer, is the exact weight that the consumer is paying for. The Bureau also deals with product certification, which is a promise from the contract of faith of the St. Lucia, the SFP, Mr. Speaker, where we ensure that goods produced in St. Lucia are of comparable world standards, because there's only one standard, Mr. Speaker, which is a world standard. The Bureau is also involved in the hotel hotel services, where we are preparing a set of standards for the hotel services, and we are starting with the Hotel Accommodation Act, where businesses, where homes that are willing and able to host visitors for the World Cup, these buildings and these homes have to be certified by the Bureau of Standards. Mr. Speaker, I will deal now briefly with my updated Consumer Affairs, Mr. Speaker. I've told you the work of the Consumer Affairs Division. The Consumer Affairs Division right now, they involve in looking at the price structure in different retail enterprises in St. Lucia. Because as you know, the government has just removed the consumption tax on a few food imports. And the government now is monitoring it so that we can ensure that price, as the agriculture sector, that price reduction reaches the consumer. So the Consumer Affairs Division will be involved in monitoring, Speaker, to ensure that the reduction in consumer prices, if there are no changes in the imported price, that reduction reaches the consumer. Mr. Speaker, we've dealt with the idea of food prices, Mr. Speaker, and the Consumer Affairs Division right now, we are working on competition legislation, competition laws. I spoke about the Consumer Credit Act a while ago. We are in the final stages, and during this session, the Consumer Protection Act will be tabled in our assembly to protect consumers, to ensure that they get quality goods and services. Mr. Speaker, briefly, I want to deal with my constituency, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the people of Castries for returning me to Parliament for a second term, and I'm sure they will return me for a third term, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank them for that, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I can proudly tell you that between 1997 and now, Castries East has seen, I want to choose my word carefully, the development that has taken, that has happened in Castries East between 1997 and now, did not happen for the entire history of Castries East previously. From Malek to Josie to the deceased Romanus Lantico, and to where? There has never been this figure. Every aspect of life, every area in Castries East has received attention from the government of Central Labour Party. Every area in this figure, starting from Bukaj and ending in Party. Every area, Mr. Speaker, and I defy any political opponent, with or without hair, to say that is not true. Every area, Mr. Speaker, every area, including the Justice Boulevard, where they are pretending now, has received attention by this parliamentary representative. Every area, Mr. Speaker, every area. I will not have lying to you, Mr. Speaker. It will take my colleague will not give me more time. If I have to outline to you the progress on the seminar. If I have to outline to you, Mr. Speaker, the progress in Castries East, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, that's going to be documented. Because, Mr. Speaker, I'm a social scientist. I document and I verify, Mr. Speaker, the classical scientific method which I remember saying about. You have to document and you have to verify what you've documented after you've done the work, Mr. Speaker. And when the time comes, Mr. Speaker, I will outline that the promises I made to the people of Castries East in 1997 have fulfilled all of them, Mr. Speaker, except one. Except one, Mr. Speaker. And today, with your permission, Mr. Speaker, I want to apologize to the people of Castries East because I will not be able to fulfill the obligation that I made as far as sewage is concerned in Arundel Hill and Dorchard Boulevard. I'll tell you why, Mr. Speaker. I'll tell you why. Last year, I reported to you that the Basic Needs Trust Fund had done all the necessary preparatory work, including the surveys and the social gathering, the social information on what exists as far as families are concerned in Arundel Hill, Mr. Speaker. And I told you that the preliminary costs were estimated at millions of dollars to bring sewage into Arundel Hill and Dorchard Boulevard. Millions of dollars. I also told you, Mr. Speaker, that the cost-benefit analysis wasn't working out because for the amount of residents there, the costs were exorbitant and the residents would have to pay too much money for sewage connection. But, Mr. Speaker, I can tell you that the main reason, Mr. Speaker, was because of the state of Wasco. Because to have sewage, you need water. And if there is no water, you can't have any sewage, Mr. Speaker. If there is no water, Mr. Speaker. So, the plan is, Mr. Speaker, as soon as we have rectified the water situation in Castries East, as soon as Wasco gets back to solid footing, and as soon as Wasco can deliver, because it knows you have sewage, if you have no water, how can you have sewage when you need there is no water? It will be against because the planning will be lopsided. You need to have water before sewage. But Mr. Speaker, talking about sewage, you know, Mr. Speaker, in a previous administration, the Justice Boulevard that they're talking about, they run a sewage pipe a few yards away from the Dorchard Boulevard, and at that time, they did not see fit to connect the Dorchard Boulevard to the sewage plant. They didn't see fit to keep that thing at that time, we don't have to do it this time. They run the pipe just next to the boulevard, and they did not connect it to the sewage. That is the situation that I inherited. So, Mr. Speaker, in this period, we will not be able to give the people of Arundel Hill sewage, but in the next period, I can assure you that the people of Arundel Hill will get there's too much proceeding that I promise. This is one of the only promises that I made that I will not be able to fulfill. And I apologize to people for that, Mr. Speaker. All other promises. Mr. Speaker, they tried something on the Marshall School. Because they thought they had a very hot political hot potato before they had caught me, Mr. Speaker. But what my constituents know about me, Mr. Speaker, is I tell them the truth. See, Mr. Speaker, let me tell you something. Every day when I go to my home, I'll go back to my constituency. I can't run away. If I used to live in Romney Bay, why did I take the highway? Leave my office, take the highway and rush home. If I live in Romney Bay, why did I start Union, take it and rush home? If I live in Romney Bay, Mr. Speaker, where I don't have to pass in Marshall to get to my home. So, I would fool them. But every day, every single day, I have to pass through my constituency to go to my home so they can bother me. I'm not running away. I can't run away. So I have to go home. That is why, Mr. Speaker, that is why. There is that bond of trust between me and my constituents. That is why. Because they see me. They see me all the time. I don't have to come down from Romney Bay and go and see them. They see me all the time. They saw me this morning, they'll see me tonight. On my way home. Because I see them every night. So Mr. Speaker, they tried something on me as far as the Marshall School is concerned. They tried to have a Marshall School, Mr. Speaker. So they got 5 or 6 people, give them a few vouchers, and let them demonstrate, fix the school, fix the school! Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Education will tell you that we have spent money on that school before. So Mr. Speaker, what I will tell you now is as we speak, $750,000 is being spent on the Marshall School. As we speak, Mr. Speaker. So the Marshall School, that balloon is no longer only a part of that balloon, Mr. Speaker, because trust, Mr. Speaker, trust. So the Marshall School is being repaired, and the Tinoche School, which a member for South East Cashland and myself share, that school is being repaired at a cost of $1.2 million, Mr. Speaker. So all the schools, plus the work we did in the Boca School and the Engibo School, plus that work, Mr. Speaker, is done on the schools in my constituency, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I promise the young men and women of Padre that I'll give them all a money for the scot. They laughed at me. They said, where you can find place in Padre to put a clock, Mr. Speaker? They did not know when I was saying that. I was thinking and I was looking. And I said, Mr. Speaker, in this budget, the Prime Minister and the Minister of Finance, and I've asked my colleague in the Ministry of Sports to make it a priority. So next week, we're going to be making a final visit on the site. We already have the estimate. It costs about $180,000. These estimates will be sent to the Ministry of Sports. The Ministry of Sports will send their personnel, and hopefully we'll begin work on the target court within the next 2 months. We'll begin work on another promise that I made that we're going to do. Mr. Speaker, so let them understand, Mr. Speaker, let them understand these things. I'm not talking about the drainage works and how the flooding in Padre, and as I speak, but on the 9th of May, we're going to begin to build footpaths by a lady called Miss Alpha Alfie. I'm not going to speak about this, Speaker. I'm going to speak about budget. I'll speak about the daycare center and the human resource development center, which they promised again. They promised and never delivered. Last year, I came and I told you, when I'm speaking to you this year, I'll tell you that there's a daycare center in my constituency, Speaker. And right now, at this very moment, if not for you, you will see children in the daycare center in Marshall, Mr. Speaker. It has entered. Kids are there. Kids of working mothers, Mr. Speaker. The children can get a proper meal at a subsidized cost of how much? A cost, I think, $40 or $50 a month. Where they get quality care, Mr. Speaker. And added to that, the library to which I contributed a computer is working, Mr. Speaker. A promise that was made to them from 1974. They were not promised, Mr. Speaker. I've been for this, Mr. Speaker. I've been for this. Mr. Speaker, they had a problem with the the health center for the speaker, and my colleague, the Minister of Health, will tell the people, will tell you why the health center has to be closed. The health center has to be closed because the health center was no longer able to meet the requirements of a modern health center. It has to be closed, Mr. Speaker. But during this period, we're going to be expanding the entry health center because into larger premises, larger and more convenient. But right now, we could not continue with treating people in the whole center, Mr. Speaker. We cannot continue. Mr. Speaker, the health center, I want to assure the people that the health center is going to be, the situation in the health center is going to be alleviated when the entry center is expanded. Mr. Speaker, I will not tell you about garbage disposal, because remember, Mr. Speaker, you remember what cash receipts look like. You remember when you came, as soon as they used to be, they don't know about this because they were not ready for not just for KO. They were not there before, Mr. Speaker. They don't know that. They don't know what cash receipts look like in 1997. But my colleagues here know, and you know, Mr. Speaker. You know what it looks like, Mr. Speaker. And take a drive now, Mr. Speaker, and you'll see what it looks like because of quality representation, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we are going to... We've repaired the James Belgrave Court. We've repaired the Enchibo Court. We have repaired the Bocage Court. We are going to build a new court. We are going to build a new court in Parliament, Mr. Speaker. We continue to be building, repairing homes for elderly people, in homes for people who do not have anybody to take care of them, Mr. Speaker. We have some serious land issues. I was very pleased when the Prime Minister disclosed that the promise that I made to the people of Bagatelle, that we will be able to give them a piece of land that they can say is theirs. The Prime Minister has said in the budget that we are going to purchase the land in Bagatelle that is owned by private people so we can redistribute it and sell it to the people of Bagatelle, Mr. Speaker. But before we've done that, we are improving the infrastructure in Bagatelle. And if you go to Bagatelle now, Mr. Speaker, you see, Mr. Speaker, again, they do not know what it looked like before. That is the problem. They don't know what it looked like before. And if you go there now, Mr. Speaker, you will see the improvement in the infrastructure in Bagatelle, Mr. Speaker. You will see the improvement. I'm proud of Mr. Speaker. The Mosaic Program, Mr. Smith, and the Minister of Agriculture and Minister of Social Transformation that we work on. We promise that we will complete the footpaths in Upper Arlington Hill. I understand from the Basic Needs Trust Fund that the contracts have been opened, a contractor will be chosen shortly, and these footpaths will start, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, two significant roads done in my constituency. The Garden Grove Road, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, they went to Garden Grove with a camera and take a picture. They did not have a big notebook and take a Mr. Speaker, you went with a big notebook and a camera and took a picture of the Garden Grove Road, Mr. Speaker. But what they were not aware of is that they tried to reconstruct the Garden Grove before. We spent the money on the permanent contractor. But my colleague in the commission was promised me that as soon as the money was available, we'll build a Garden Grove Road. And if you go now, Mr. Speaker, you'll see a spanking new Garden Grove Road for the residents of Antibor, Mr. Speaker. Also, the Badger Road in Rockall, again, they don't know that knowledge. The Badger Road, Mr. Speaker, was rocks. Rocks. In fact, the member for Cashew Salt said to me last week, "Look like I built a road to heaven." Because if you saw what these areas look like before, Mr. Speaker, it really, really, really hurts my heart. When I see people who have absolutely no connection, who left these communities for years and went away to make money, who left the communities, who did not want to pass in the community, who attacked and criticized me when I started the jazz festival in Marshall, who said I was a madman to one of the people to Marshall. people who do not even want people to know that they have residents, they have relatives living in Mashon. They don't want to be chosen to represent properly in Mashon, Mr. Speaker. Never. That can't be, Mr. Speaker. Because the people of Castries East, they have understood what good and proper representation is, Mr. Speaker. And the evidence is there. The evidence is there, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, I want to say... Yes, and it's further, the people of Bocage, they want a community center because Bocage hasn't got, there's no community center in Bocage, Mr. Speaker. Bocage has a post office, Bocage has roads that are repaired, Bocage has a boat, and there is no community center. So me, my colleagues in Castries North, you understand, and the resident of Castries East, we've got together and the government has acquired a piece of land. And then next year, after we get re-elected, we will start construction of an HRBC in Bocage for the people of Castries North and Castries. And Castries East. From Castries North, guys. Mr. Speaker, I want to thank you for your indulgence. I want to thank all the people in my ministry, Mr. Speaker, my government secretaries, the chairman of the tourist board, the staff for the tourist board, the manufacturer association, all the people in the Chamber of Commerce for their cooperation. I want to compliment the Prime Minister for a budget well delivered, and I want to thank you, and I want to tell you, Mr. Speaker, that I look forward to returning here with more of my colleagues, because we have to go a little further up the road there. With a lot more of my colleagues, Mr. Speaker, at the next budget session to continue the good governance of the solution in the back.